Welcome back to Colorado Matters from Colorado Public Radio. I'm Ryan Warner. Quick, what shape is Colorado? It's not a rectangle. It's a trapezoid. And that's one of the many things you learn reading a new book called Colorado Mountain Companion, a potpourri of useful miscellany from the highest parts of the highest state. That's all part of the title. The author is M. John Fahey, and he ends up debunking some myths and explaining some odd terminology, like what cyclists mean when they say tacoed. Fahey tells CPR's Zachary Barr about the argument that convinced him to write this book.
It began when I was sitting in a bar in Bisbee, Arizona. Found myself sitting next to a guy who just asked me where I was from. And I said, well, Frisco, Colorado. And he said, well, holy cow, I was born in Leadville, Colorado. And during that conversation, he mentioned to some of his buddies, Leadville is the highest town in the country. And I guess I'd had a couple of beverages at that point and did not purse my lips. And I said, well, there's a little disputation about that. And, of course, the conversation went southward from that point on. On my drive back to Summit County, I began thinking about the number of times that I've had those kinds of conversations. What's the highest town in Colorado? What's the coldest town in Colorado? What's the biggest vertical climb? What's the highest road? Those kinds of things.
And so what is the highest town in Colorado that you...
I don't think you have enough time.
You told this fellow in the bar something. I think
at a given point I told him adios as I egressed the premises with, you know, unpummeled. There is no standard way to measure the altitude of a town. And Colorado has an arcane municipal distinction when if you're over 2,000 people, you are a city. Leadville is the highest city. The highest incorporated municipality in North America is Alma, although Winter Park annexed the Winter Park ski area a couple years ago. So now within Winter Park's boundaries, they go up to over 12,000 feet, and they are now marketing themselves as the highest town in North America.
Well, no wonder your drinking companion was so disappointed to hear this answer.
Yeah, Leadville wasn't even in the top four. I'm doing a reading in Leadville here soon, and I will probably avoid this subject.
Because towns and people love owning this kind of information, to be the best or the highest or the largest, and here you are...
Raining on their parade.
Raining on their parade.
Well, it is... I grew up in Colonial Virginia, the easternmost part of Virginia. And their towns and the people who live in them are very possessive of how old they are, when they were incorporated, and that sort of thing. And Colorado, the mountains of Colorado being altitude-based, people are interested in those extremes. I mean, why else would you brag about your town being the icebox of the nation?
It's Fraser, Colorado.
Well, but that's another disputed example of this sort of stuff, because Fraser, that's a trademark. That is not a climatic reality. They own the trademark to the term the icebox of the nation, which they were on their toes. They horked it from International Falls, Minnesota. But it does not reflect necessarily climatic reality. There is no criteria for determining the coldest town in the state or anywhere. And if somebody held a gun to my head after an amount of research you cannot imagine, I would have to say it's Gunnison.
Gunnison is the icebox of Colorado.
Of Colorado, yeah. I would have to say, based upon several chapters in this very fascinating book, I would have to say it's Gunnison.
You devote a handful of chapters to decoding the lingo used by people who love their sport, their activity. Where did the idea for this come from?
This is going to sound like it's a theme. I was in a bar in Leadville, Colorado, one of the brew pubs there that is no longer open, and I overheard a conversation a few bar stools down by a couple of, they were obviously mountain bikers. They were dressed in the height of mountain bike attire. Guys my age. So it wasn't teenagers, and it wasn't a generational thing. And they were talking about the mountain bike ride they just took. I did not understand what they were saying. I had no clue what information they were passing on to each other. And the idea of having activity-specific lexicons in this book germinated from that. And I have included seven. So there's mountain biking, road biking, general, skiing, that kind of stuff. Because each of these activities have their own idioms, their own phraseology, their own vocabulary. And so that's where that came from, yet another bar.
Well, could I be so bold as to quiz you on the content of your own book?
You would not be the first person to do that, and I'm not doing so well on it.
Okay, let's give it a shot. So this is from the mountain biking chapter. To taco.
To bend your front wheel in a crash?
Exactly, in the shape of a taco.
Okay.
How about this one? 3-hour tour.
A mountain bike trip that was supposed to be kind of short that ended up being sort of epic based on Gilligan's Island theme.
Very good. 2 for 2. Wild pigs.
Squeaking brakes.
Bravo.
Wow. And your listeners should know we are not cheating here.
That's true. another thing I learned from your book is that Colorado's not a rectangle. It's a trapezoid.
A lot of people consider Colorado to be a rectangle because it's one of three states that were delineated by lines of latitude and longitude. And if you do that, then it's almost impossible to be a rectangle because lines of latitude get smaller. Therefore, the lines of longitude can't be parallel.
Latitude being the horizontal lines,
yes, exactly.
Right? And as you go up to the poles.
Yes, they get smaller and smaller, and therefore the lines of longitude cannot be parallel. So it's a trapezoid. And in addition, there have been several major land surveying errors along Colorado's borders. So I actually had to get the State Geological Survey to do calculations specifically for me in this book telling me what Colorado's actual land area is, because I found about 15 different land sizes. So there's new information in this book.
Another part of the book that amused me, frankly, is that you list a number of unfortunate ways one can die in the mountains. Death by bear, death by lightning, death by mountain lion.
Death by 14er interfaces.
Right, your run-of-the-mill hiking accident.
Uh-huh. Or falling off a 1,000-foot cliff.
Do you have a favorite one from the book?
There was a lightning chapter. I don't even remember where I pulled these out, but there was a whole series of narratives about lightning deaths. And it was really sobering to realize that there were 5 bicyclists riding in a line at one point, I think down in Custer County, and lightning hit and only one of them suffered any lightning damage. Well, these guys are riding wheel to wheel. That's how capricious lightning is. There was also another lightning one. It was the biggest mass lightning strike in U.S. history that took place on a golf course outside Kremling. The guys did the right thing. They went in their car when the storm came in. They came out of the car when they thought it was safe, and 19 of them ended up going to the hospital. Nobody got killed. Colorado is the second most lightning-prone state in the country, and when you're doing research on weather and lightning, you're going to come across those kinds of statistics. It's not necessarily that I sought them out. The bear and mountain lion encounters, that was stuff that I just happened to have known about before I did the research on this book. So probably about a third of this book, I had a pretty good idea about it before I started research.
John, thanks so much.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
M. John Fahey's new book is Colorado Mountain Companion, a potpourri of useful miscellany from the highest parts of the highest state. Fahey is also the editor of the monthly magazine Mountain Gazette. He spoke with CPR's Zachary Barr.